everyone. Welcome to the Crafty Garden Mom Podcast. My name is Tanisha. If you're a new listener, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for giving me a listen. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. So I hope everyone has been doing well. It's been quite a few months, at least almost 3 months now since I last podcast. A lot has been going on. It's been extremely busy around here. And I guess I will reveal the not so visible elephant in the room. I broke my ankle at the end of August. And while this didn't wasn't technically the reason I wasn't able to podcast, it did kind of throw me off basically into September and now October before I could get my act together enough to think about doing other stuff other than making sure I didn't do further damage to my ankle and got on the way to healing. I did not require surgery. It was a clean break. And I'll talk a little bit more in just a few minutes about how all this happened. But anyway, we had a very good end to summer. I think July was when I last podcast and let you know we were having a good summer. And the girls did camps and we went swimming quite often and did fun things with my family. And we had our annual big barbecue cookout with family and friends in early August, and my brother and his family were able to come from Texas, and both of my husband's brothers were able to come with their families. One of his brothers also lives in Texas, and the other one lives in New Jersey, and his mom and my parents, and so it was just so great. I think it was the first time I said to my husband, I think it's the first time since we got married that everybody was all together. I could be wrong about that. I think maybe in 12 years, there have been one or two other occasions his one brother who lives in Texas, he doesn't often get to come. So that may have been the first time since we got married that everybody was in the same location. But anyway, like, and all the cousins and my nieces and nephews, and sorry about that. I'm in my office working and there might be an interruption of my phone, but I'll try and pause it quickly before that. But anyway, so all the cousins were together and we rented a big water slide, and basically all of the kids spent the entire day of the cookout out there. We had to kind of wrangle them to force them to eat something because they'd gone just basically on fumes all day long. But they had a ball. It was fabulous. So, yeah. So, and then the girls started school, of course, the end of August. And Madeline, who is my youngest, started kindergarten. And Samantha, my oldest, started fourth grade. And they're both doing great. Madeline got the same kindergarten teacher Samantha had. So I knew she was going to be in great hands because we love her. We love her teacher, and she's really, really doing well in the class and has made some friends, and Samantha in fourth grade, she's doing well academically and socially. I think it was a little rough. There was a little bit of the, you know, they're not talking to me one day, and then the next day they're best friends, and then the next day, you know, so-and-so's not talking to me again, and everybody has a phone and came back, you know, from summer and they have a phone. How come I can't have a phone? And, if you have fourth grade, third, fourth, fifth, and older, you know the pain, right? Like, it's just, it seems there is something every day, every week. I wonder sometimes, I'm like, why do 9-year-olds need phones? That's just my personal opinion. The why. Yeah, my husband and I are trying, we're pretty firm in holding off on any of the social media and a cell phone or smartphone, you know, until she's well into middle school. That may be unrealistic with what kids have, but We just are pretty firm that, you know, she has an iPad. It's certainly not like she is not electronically hooked up. She has an iPad. She had an iPod, which she lost, which doesn't help her cause with the phone issue at all. But yeah, she has those things. But the only thing that she would really use a smartphone for would be social media, which is for us, and to make phone calls. And at this point, she is nowhere, she goes nowhere where there is not at least one responsible adult with a cell phone. And I always tell her, you know, even if there was an emergency, the one of the first things I would say to you is, okay, put Mrs. or Mr. so-and-so in charge on the phone so I can talk to them. And it's perfectly, I'm perfectly fine with it being the reverse. If you feel you need to call me, one of those adults can use their phone and they will let you call me. I said, you've never been anywhere where they are going to say, well, no, you can't use my phone. Like, it just, it wouldn't happen. And if it did happen, then that would get addressed separately with the adult, you know, and so, yeah, it's one of those things where I hear quite a bit, because Samantha does play soccer. I do hear parents say, well, you know, it's good safety because, you know, when they're in sports and we drop them off. And I get that to a point. But again, the reason I am comfortable dropping her somewhere where I'm not there to supervise is because there are responsible adults. And part of that responsibility, in my opinion, is knowing when to make a phone call to the parent. And, you know, when my daughter, and the other thing is I tell her, and you, if you're in a social situation, you don't need to call me anyway. You know, I'm like, I'll talk to you about the fun you had when I come to pick you up. So anyway, believe me, we've had all kinds of conversations about this. We're holding firm. We're not always the most popular parents around these parts, but we're okay with that too. So anyway, if you do see Sam, if you hear about an SOS being put out by a 9-year-old in Maryland, you'll know it's my daughter, because she's got the meanest parents in the world, obviously, and she needs to broadcast that on the 6 and 11 o'clock news. So just keep an ear out. It's probably my daughter. You can go ahead and turn me in. That's fine. Anyway, so speaking of school, on the first day of school, the end of August, we're, you know, running around. I had stuff together, but, you know, you're kind of running around and just doing stuff. And I had gone down to the basement and done my workout. And so I was still wearing my sneakers and came upstairs. And I'm walking around. Technically, I wasn't running. I was walking around the house. And I think I was about to go into the office. And one of my daughters said something. And I stopped and kind of turned or tried to pivot quickly. And pivoted too much on my left ankle, on my left foot. And I heard my left ankle give way and pop. Now, I am one of those people who, when I wear heels, or even not technically heels, but, you know, if you've got like a wedge or something like that on, I wouldn't say I have weak ankles, but there have been times where my ankle has kind of twisted and I have to right myself quickly. But I've never really sprained it or broken. I've never broken a bone before in my life. And but there was just something about hearing that pop and then within a few seconds feeling the searing pain go up my leg to the point my eyes started watering and I'm just like, oh my gosh. And yeah, so and my older daughter was a good distance away in the kitchen and she heard it. She was like, Mom, what was that? And I was like, I think that was my ankle giving way. I said giving way. I didn't say breaking or spraining. So I immediately hobbled. My husband came downstairs because he heard me kind of yelling out and he helped me over to the couch in the family room. And, you know, we iced it and elevated and did all of that. And the girls, meanwhile, this is the first morning of the first day of school. And so I told him, I said, okay, I'm not missing this. This is how determined a person I am. Even when I am in such pain, I was determined to see Maddie get on the bus to the for the first day of school. So I said, you walk them to the bus stop, because it's kind of our tradition on the first day of school to all four of us walk together. I said, you walk them to the bus stop and I will drive, because it's my right foot is still fine. I will hobble. We got one of Sam's old crutches from when she'd sprained her ankle. And I hobble to the van. I know I'm nuts. Hobble to the van, drove down to the bus stop, took, you know, I had my husband, I'm calling out the window to him to make sure he gets pictures. And then we drove back up to the house after they got on the bus. And my husband was like, I don't know if I should go into work. I'm like, nope, I'm fine. I'll be fine. It's just a bad sprain. You know, I said, I'm just going to keep it elevated. I can sit here on the couch and work. It's fine. The next day, this was Monday, the next day, Tuesday, I had to go to Chicago for a very important series of meetings for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of that week. And I mean, technically, if I'd been hospitalized, I could have gotten out of it, but it was really important that I was there. So I arranged. Meanwhile, I have not gone to the doctor. I've not gone to the ER. I am determined that this is just a bad sprain. My husband went out and bought me a wrap, like a not quite an ACE bandage, something better than that, for my foot. So I called the airline and arranged for wheelchair service, because even I, in my crazy state, knew that there was no way I was going to be able to hobble through an airport terminal, especially Chicago O'Hare, which is, I mean, I've traveled all, I've, you know, based on my previous job, you know, I have been pretty much in every airport in the United States of America, pretty much, even the little small, little regional ones. And I will say O'Hare is one of the ones that has the longest terminals ever. So just in my mind, I was picturing trying, like landing at O'Hare and trying to get to a outside to the taxi. I'm like, there's no way it's going to happen. It would literally take me 3 hours to hobble in pain. So I arranged for the first time ever. I've never had to do this, but I called the airline and they arranged wheelchair service for me. And so that worked out just fine. And I hobbled around for 3 days in Chicago in this hotel. Luckily, the event and all the meetings were in the same hotel. My boss was there and she helped me out by carrying my stuff and things like that. So it worked out fine. I was in quite a bit of pain. So Friday I got back because it was pretty much still the same level of pain and still a good amount of swelling and bruising. And everybody at this conference kept saying to me, oh, you know, because I kept saying, oh, it's a bad sprain. And they said, oh, you would have been better off if you just broken it because a sprain takes even longer to heal than a break. I'm going, great. So I'm supposed to be wishing it's a break. So I go on Friday and get an x-ray and the urgent care doctor who I later learned had worked in the Navy as a doctor in the Navy in some pretty remote places. He first came in and he's like, well, it's a break. He's like, and I'm really impressed. You have been hobbling around in airports and, you know, around hotels on a broken ankle, because I only took one crutch with me to Chicago. I didn't take two crutches because this is, again, how dumb and stubborn I am. I was like, well, there's no way I can carry bags and my purse and stuff like that. If I have two crutches, I can't do that. Everybody, now people, you probably know why my husband just shakes his head at me and just is like, he does. He just closes his eyes and shakes his head at me when I tell him stuff. But anyway, so he's like, I'm impressed, because he's like, I got these guys coming in here because he works where the urgent care is. There's a lot of like car dealerships and stuff kind of nearby. He's like, I got these guys coming in here with little, you know, nicks and burns and fingers, you know, maybe a little jammed and stuff. And they are crying like babies. And you've been walking around on a broken ankle for a week with that ratty ACE bandage around your ankle. He's like, and I am impressed. He's like, but we need to get you sealed up, because now this is right before Labor Day weekend. He's like, because you're probably not going to get in to see an orthopedist until Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. So he, again, this Navy doctor who'd worked in some really remote places, he jerry-rigged, because he did not have the kind of splint for my calf that it needed. He made me this, it's not out of plaster. I don't even know what the material is, but it did have to like, it did take some time to set. But he made me like a, basically a cast. I would, it's not, it wasn't quite a cast. Cause when I picture a cast, it's not, removable. This was removable. Like he molded it to my ankle and my calf and part of my foot on the top part. And then the back, so that I could remove it. He, it, the whole thing was wrapped with this really good industrial strength ace bandage thing that I was, with the clips, was able to remove so I could take a shower. He's like, this will hold and do until Tuesday or Wednesday, but don't leave it much longer than that. And it worked. And he gave me the good drugs, which I really needed by then. You know, and he told me, he's like, well, you can't take, because I said, you know, a couple shots of whiskey maybe. And he's like, well, I'm going to give you the good drugs. You choose. You don't take both. He's like, just pick which one you think will work better. He was a really, really nice guy. Anyway, so yeah, then I went to the orthopedist and, he told me also, he confirmed, yeah, it's broken. Let's get you in a walking boot because it is a clean break. I don't think it'll need surgery. I think it'll heal on its own, but we'll check it in 3 weeks to make sure it's on its way to healing. And honestly, by the end of the second week with the walking boot on, it definitely was feeling better. I was able to walk on it with the walking boot very gingerly. And I didn't, it's not like I walked long distances, but I was able to get around and things. And then by the third week, it was much, much better. Although when I went to get it x-rayed again, he said, it's not fully healed. You know, I know it's feeling better. Please don't walk around as if you don't still have a broken ankle, because technically you do still have a broken ankle. So he's like, 3 more weeks, come back in, which is this coming Thursday. And so that will be actually today, Monday, October 10th, it is actually 6 weeks. I'm keeping my fingers crossed when I go in on Thursday that he'll tell me I'm healed, because I am right now, like I'm not wearing the walking boot. I wear the walking boot when I leave the house and around the house. I am wearing, my sock that I put on with the walking boot, and I'm just walking carefully around the house because, you know, I'm trying to be careful because this did happen literally wearing sneakers tied up and just walking around my house. So, and I broke my ankle, so it can happen anywhere, anytime. And yeah, so that's been the ordeal. The biggest pain is just basically getting over the feeling that I'm walking around with a bucket of cement on my foot. That took some getting used to. But other than that, I'm really not in pain, just a twinge or two here. I'm no longer on the good drugs. I just every once in a while take some ibuprofen if I need it, if it's been a long day, things like that. And I'm knocking on wood that it's healed. It's healed. And I think the main thing for me, because along with this, one of the things I have tried to do, but in the last couple weeks I have fallen off the wagon, was to try and stick to Weight Watchers points or within my Weight Watchers points. Because one of the things I had started doing in July and August was walking 3 to 5 miles a day, at least 4 or 5 days a week. And I was really feeling a big difference in my overall health and how I felt and how my clothes were fitting. And I knew that not being able to do that kind of physical activity, I had to really watch my food intake. Otherwise, I was just going to eliminate all the progress I had made over the last year. And it's not like I lost a whole bunch of weight, but in terms of feeling healthy and just being consistent with exercise, it was really helping, I think, my overall, some of the health issues I'd had last year. So I decided to, to work towards staying within the points that the Weight Watchers program allowed me to lose weight, but you know what I mean? Just to be able to, since I couldn't focus on the physical activity, which is frankly what I tend to focus more on if I'm trying to lose weight, I need to focus more on the nutrition side. but I tend to find it easier just to exercise a lot. Anyway, so I just decided, you know, what you can control is what you put in your mouth. If I can't control the amount of physical activity I can get, I can control the amount of food intake I consume. So for probably 3 or 4 weeks, I was pretty good, especially Monday through Friday, about staying within those points. And when I weighed myself, I think I've only weighed myself maybe twice. When I last weighed myself, I had gained a pound or two because in the last couple weeks, I have kind of let some of that go. A little bit of the Halloween candy has started coming in the house, and the kids are bringing home more treats, it seems, and things like that. And I need to kind of get back on track. But my hope is that along with getting back, being determined to get back on track nutritionally, now that, because even with that, I still was missing the physical activity. I was still missing. I did get used to getting up and walking and that good feeling you get after a workout. And I missed that. Yeah. So that I have missed. So I'm hoping on Thursday that he will tell me I can start some physical activity again, and hopefully that helps also strengthen my ankle. I will probably, when I get started, I will for a while have that concern about re-breaking the ankle, because he said to me the last time I went in, he's like, you know, you have to be careful even after it is fully, when I tell you it's quote unquote fully healed, he's like, you might be surprised at the percent of people who within 3 to 6 months come back in with the same injury, you know, in the same place, because they aren't paying attention, or they're trying to overwork the area again to get some strength back into it, and they end up re-injuring themselves. So I don't want to do that either, but I'm hoping walking what I was doing before is not going to be an issue. So anyway, that's what's been going on. We are enjoying fall. The girls are in Girl Scouts and soccer and swim and gymnastics. So we're busy mostly on the weekends, but it seems throughout the week there is something going on as well. Even trying to keep them to one main activity, and for Sam, it's soccer, and for Maddie, it's gymnastics, and then Girl Scouts, which technically is an activity, but I feel with the troops that they're in and the values that they're learning and the activities that they do, I feel right now it's worth it. So we do that. But it seems with both of them being in these activities, we're constantly doing something. Constantly. And then Maddie is still in swim because we feel, my husband and I strongly feel, that's a life skill that both girls need to learn. So she will probably be in that until Christmas time. Probably by winter break, she'll be a strong enough swimmer. She's in the highest level of her swimming, or second to highest level of her swim classes now. So we're not really interested, unless one of them showed some strong interest in swimming, like on a swim team. We were never interested in it, them learning to swim to do swim team as an activity. We were just more interested in them not drowning if they fell into a body of water, you know. Although, you know, technically, of course, you can drown even when you know how to swim, but you know what I mean. If they would at least know the basics of swimming, and Maddie's pretty much there. Anyway, so those activities are just, it's like constant keeping you busy. So that's what's going on now. I have not been doing much sewing, although I did make a couple of knitting bags. I whipped a couple of those up, and I actually sent one as a part of a swap. And there's really not much to talk about there. I mean, I used some scrap fabric that I had, and in the colors that my swap partner liked, in these pinks and blues. And I forgot to take a picture of it before I sent it off. But she sent me one that looks like a popcorn, like the red and white striped popcorn containers with popcorn fabric on the top half. And it's so, so cute. I will take a picture of this because it's one of the cutest bags, like drawstring bags I have ever seen. And the little tag on the side is actually a label of that looks like a ticket, like a admit one ticket. I mean, it's just, it's incredibly adorable. So I will take a picture of that and either post it on Instagram or my long neglected blog so you can take a look, because this thing is just so stinking cute. And, but what I did finish, were some knitting projects. I finished my Dobby socks, which were, just a vanilla sock made out of Nomadic Yarns. Dobby is a free elf. And so I finished those, and I also finished my hitchhiker shawl that I made out of the Miss Babs Yowza yarn in the Sleeping Beauty colorway. And, yeah, I'm really happy it's getting cooler so I can start wearing some of these shawls. One of the things that I found now that I work from home is that I'm not quite dressing like, you know, yoga pants and t-shirts every day. I'm making a conscious effort because I mentally feel more ready to work when I actually get myself ready to work, if that makes sense. I mean, because for years I would get dressed up in office clothes and, you know, had to, that kind of helped mentally prepare me for my workday. And just going from bed to rolling downstairs to my office wasn't really working for me. I kind of felt that I was, had that sluggish feeling and like I was just kind of supposed to lounge around all day and this work thing was such a nuisance and I don't want to do it. Versus if I actually, you know, get up, take shower, not put on full makeup, but, you know, make myself presentable, brush my hair, maybe put on some, I think it's called BB cream, beauty cream, where it's more like almost like a tinted moisturizer, but it evens out your skin tone. And I don't bother with mascara unless, you know, I've got a meeting or something, but, you know, just putting in a little extra effort and then putting on a clean pair of pants and a shirt, or they're not yoga pants, but they are, I don't know what to call them. I guess leggings, and a top, a long top. You know, just something where if I had to run to my kid's school or if I had to run to Target or, you know, I was meeting a friend or something real quick, I wouldn't be completely mortified because I look like a total slob and I rolled out of bed. It's a couple levels above that is what I'm saying. And that for me mentally gets me more prepared and ready to take on the day. And where I was going with this with my knitted items is I'm going to try, even though I'm home alone most of the day, Monday through Friday, I'm happy it's getting cool where I have an excuse and a reason to wear my knitted garments, my shawls, my cowls, things like that. And I have been trying, again, it's hard for me to go cold turkey from working in an office with people all day to working from home, not seeing people all day long. It's been a bit of an adjustment that took me a while to get used to. So I do make a concerted effort once or twice a week to go to Starbucks, and I work for maybe an hour, hour and a half in the Starbucks. And what's really funny is it's not like I really talk to anybody there either, you know, other than the barista making my drink. There's also a corner bakery that I've gone to lunch and sat there for a little while, but it just gets me in the mindset of, oh, people are around. I don't have to talk to them. And I, you know, I really don't want to. It's just kind of, I guess, comforting to know I can do that. It's also very cool. Because don't get me wrong, as much of an adjustment as a slight adjustment as it might have been, I absolutely love working from home. I love the fact that I can work and have like a report running and throw a load of laundry in, or because of the broken ankle, there were some things that I like to usually do at the very beginning of fall, like go through all the girls' clothes or the toys and start culling those out in preparation for Christmas and things like that, that I've really put off. Even decorating around the house, it took me, you know, whereas I usually do that around Labor Day, it was probably mid to late September before I did any fall decorating, you know, before I was up to that. So just kind of just being able to do those things throughout the day rather than rushing to do them late at night or on the weekends is fabulous. And the other thing I don't mind is, you know, I've complained about the DC traffic multiple times on this podcast. Seeing in the morning how it's like gridlock and I am not having to sit in any of that. That is the best feeling. So I'm not at all complaining. I'm really enjoying my job. I'm really enjoying working from home. And I am getting, I feel, more things done now that I've worked out a regular as possible, schedule for myself. So some of the things I'm working on knitting wise, I'm working on another pair of socks that I'm actually almost finished with. I'm knitting those out of Knit Picks Felici yarn, which is probably one of my favorite sock yarns ever, in the sunset colorway. They call it sunset. I call it more. It's basically their fall colors. It's a self-striping yarn in multiple fall shades. So these are very fall looking socks for myself. And next up in the socks, I'm probably going to knit the girls a pair of socks each that I might try and keep as a Christmas surprise. We will see. We'll see how successful I am at that, because they're very nosy and they're, you know, they're always very curious about what I'm knitting. So we'll see. And it's a toss up between whether I want to make another shawl, because I do have the Spice Market shawl kit that I bought at the Maryland Sheep and Wool, which quite a few podcasters have been making and showing off on Instagram, and it is gorgeous. And I really want it. But the other thing I really want, and I bought the yarn for, is my first cardigan, the Practically cardigan. And I want to make that out of Madeline Tosh yarn, which is a very, very nice yarn, in the Tarte colorway, which is a deep red, almost a burgundy red, but it definitely has some of the blue tones in it to make a little bit brighter than a burgundy. So it's just a really, really beautiful color. And I've seen one of these cardigans made up in this exact shade and fell in love with it. So I'm debating which one to make next. We will see. We'll see which one I decide to cast on in the next episode, I'll tell you. Or follow my Instagram and you'll probably see the progress that I'm making on my first cardigan. We'll see. Some other things I've been doing. I have been doing some art journaling. I've mainly been doing collage art journaling, which is very relaxing because I cut out a lot of the collage pieces at night, watching TV or watching a show. And then once or twice throughout the week, I try and spend 30 to 60 minutes doing a little bit of that. And that's very relaxing. And that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it so far with the crafting. And the other thing that I want to do once I am officially out of the boot and into wearing shoes all day round or all day long is clean up my garden and kind of get out some of the old weeds and scrubs and things like that. Because it did get neglected in July and August. Honestly, I didn't really do much gardening at all in those months. So I just kind of want to get it cleaned out so it's not a big mess in the spring and the soil has some time to, you know, I might put some compost and things like that to kind of let it spend the winter getting healthy and things for spring, because I definitely want to garden again in the spring, next spring. And that's pretty much all that I've got, other than some books that I've been reading. I'm keeping an eye out because I think I see my girls coming, so I may have to pause this and restart. But a couple of books that I have been, that I've enjoyed and I did want to mention are, I finished Everything, Everything by Nicola Yoon. This is one that I've had, it's a YA novel and I've had it on my list for quite a while. And I'd heard so many good things about this book and all of them are true. It's definitely one, if you like YA, if you like well-written YA, it's a bit of a romance, but it's more than that. Nicola Yoon is an author to watch. Okay, it involves a teenage girl. She's 17 or 18, and her name is Maddie. And she has skids, which is basically, if you remember the Bubble Boy, where she cannot go outdoors because she can't. She basically has to be in a very clean environment because anything can affect her immune system and she can get sick and possibly die. There's a boy who moves in next door, and they develop a friendship and then a love. And the storyline is both witty because of the back and forth between those two and how their friendship develops, with him learning of her disease, and, you know, yet a romance develops between them. And she learns about his life at home and what he's going through. And yeah, so I don't want to give too much away because there is a twist in the story at the end that you kind of see coming, but it's still just a really well done story. And especially for this age group that this, you know, this takes place in, I think it just... I think Nicola Yoon really, really nailed it with a lighthearted, fun, witty romance with two characters that, you know, are coming of age, and they're both learning about the world and the expectations and dealing with a lot of stress in their lives, both individually and together. And I just think she does a really good job. And she does have another novel coming out this fall, and I think it's an adult novel. I could be wrong about that, but there is another one, and it is already getting really, really good reviews. So I'm really looking forward to that one as well. So that's Everything, Everything by Nicola Yoon. And then I also read Amy Schumer's new biography, The Girl with the Lower Back Tattoo. I've been aware of Amy Schumer. I think I've watched a little bit of her show, Inside Amy Schumer. And, you know, I saw Trainwreck, her movie, and so I kind of got a sense of, you know, her comedy, and I know it's not for everyone. I have been enjoying some of the biographies that I've read by female comedians like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Mindy Kaling, and so I decided to give this one a try as well. And I'm really glad I did. Just like I said, I didn't know very much at all about Amy Schumer. And if you just kind of take what you see in her persona on screen, like through her movie and even her comedy, you don't even get a portion of who she is and what she is like. She's very, very candid, I will say that, and very outspoken. And there is a lot of language that she uses just in her everyday talk. Now, I listened to the audio version of her book, and she reads it, and I liked that because it was definitely her voice through her book, and she did a very good job. But she's very candid about, you know, like her life growing up with her parents, and, you know, she started out where they lived in a, you know, pretty well off, and her dad owned, and now I'm drawing a blank, but it is a name of a baby furniture company, a high-end baby furniture company that I vaguely recall from the 80s and 90s, but now I'm drawing a blank, but it went out of business. So she grew up kind of wealthy, and then she wasn't. And then I'm not giving anything away. I mean, you can, on Wikipedia, this part is, her father developed multiple sclerosis and her parents got a divorce. And she talks about dealing, you know, managing and dealing with one parent who, you know, is ill and has a very serious, illness, and helping manage that. As well as her mom, and her mom comes with her own sets of quirks and things that happened in her life that affected both Amy and her sister and brother. And she's very candid about these things and, you know, how she dealt with them. And she's also very candid about her fame and the money that have come with that. And so she says, you know, she's very blunt. She'll say, yes, the money's great. It's awesome to be able to, buy whatever you want, but it's also awesome to be able to afford the absolute best doctors of multiple sclerosis that, you know, you can get for your father, and to be able to make sure he's able to get the absolute best care possible, you know, that she wishes everybody had access to. But she, through her work, is able to do this. So she's very candid about those kinds of things. She's candid about love and sex and loss, and she tells it in a very down, what I feel a very down to earth way. And kind of like Amy Poehler's book, where she's also very candid about the time she was wrong and the mistakes she made and the regrets she has. And, you know, part of that is age. Some of it did happen before she was even 18. And then other things, dumb things she's done, or, you know, found herself in situations where she wasn't making the best of decisions for her life, and what got her out of that, i.e., you know, she was in a very bad relationship, and she, you know, looking now, she's like, I waited way too long to get out of that bad relationship. But when you're in it and you're in your early 20s and, you know, you don't know better, and many of us have been there. So, I liked her voice and the way it came through, where she was very, you could tell she was being very genuine. It wasn't affected at all. And she didn't sugarcoat quite a few things. So, some of it kind of made me wonder. I'm like, I hope her dad gave her the okay to reveal some of this about his own personal, issues, things that happened to him with his multiple sclerosis. But that's on her part to work out, of course. But it was a very quick read. It was entertaining. It was funny. But I found myself having a lot of sympathy and empathy for her in quite a few spots there. So that's The Girl with the Lower Back Tattoo, which I actually think is, for a comedian biography, I think that's a great title. And that's by Amy Schumer. I'm sure you've seen it, or you'll be able to find it pretty easily if you do like biographies like that. And I would say, if you did enjoy Tina Fey and Mindy Kaling and Amy Poehler's books, I definitely recommend Amy Schumer's. I think it's right up there with those. And then another one that I highly, highly recommend, by an author I highly, highly recommend, is Brown Girl Dreaming by Jacqueline Woodson. I was blown away by her writing. And this is another one that I'm embarrassed I have had on my shelf for way too long. I mean, I have the advance copy of this book, and it came out 3 or 4 years ago, maybe. No, maybe not that long, maybe 3 years ago. But anyway, I've had it on my shelf for way too long to have not read it by now. As well as, you know, this is the type of author that I am going back through her entire backlist, and it's pretty extensive. For an author who, she won the National Book Award for Brown Girl Dreaming, and I was maybe 50 pages in, maybe not even that, and I knew exactly why she'd won the National Book Award, because it's just so well done, this book. But she has a pretty extensive backlist of books that I'm planning to go through, and I really want my daughters to read this book. Maddie's too young, but I think Samantha in maybe a year or two it'll be perfect for her. But anybody should read this. I mean, it's just so well done. And it is the story of a young girl who, and it's Jacqueline Woodson's life basically as a young girl growing up in both Ohio and, I think they moved to North Carolina. And then her mom moved to New York City. So she lives in, she has several families, she says in the book. And it reads so fast because each of the chapters is basically like a poem. It reads kind of like a poem, but you're definitely reading a story as it goes along. And it is a very well-rounded and well-told story. And she, you know, she talks about growing up with her grandfather and her father, and then moving to New York City as a girl from the South, and, you know, the things, the cultural differences. And yeah, I don't want to give too much away, because I loved this book, and I loved the voice she had as a young woman, a young girl, and then growing into a young woman. It reminded me a little of, not in terms of the prose and the way it was written and on the page, but Kind of like that coming of age of A Tree Grows in Brooklyn or one of the Judy Blume books, you know, just this young girl with her thoughts of her family and her faith. And it's just very interesting. I mean, she grew up as a Jehovah's Witness and what that meant. And, you know, I don't know much about the Jehovah's Witness faith. So just learning some of that. And yeah, so I just think Jacqueline Woodson did a very, very good job of telling this story where someone I think as young as maybe 10, 11, or 12 years old could relate all the way up to me in my 40s. And I just loved it. I think I read it in less than 2 days. I mean, I just kept going and going and going. I just felt she did such a good job. And her new book, Another Brooklyn, which is an adult book. I think it's a continuation of her story, but now as an adult, and it's definitely considered an adult novel, or excuse me, an adult nonfiction book, but in the same kind of prose. And she is on the short list for the National Book Award for that book as well. So yeah, she is an author to watch, as well as, again, if you read Brown Girl Dreaming and like it, just know she has a really good backlist, a number of titles. And I'm definitely over the next year just going to take my time and absorb all of them. I mean, I just loved her. Another author that I've done that with, and I actually want to reread most of her books because I blew through them all in college. I just got obsessed with J. California Cooper, and I kind of feel that same excitement about Jacqueline Woodson and her books as I did at the time when I got into J. California Cooper. So you'll probably hear me talk about at least one or two more of Jacqueline Woodson's books as we go along with this podcast, because I just really, really love quote unquote discovering a new author that I'm excited about. So, and then for fun again, one of my other favorite all-time authors is Susan Elizabeth Phillips. Complete 360 from a Jacqueline Woodson or an Amy Schumer. First Star I See Tonight by Susan Elizabeth Phillips. This is one in the Chicago Stars series, which, I remember reading these 10 plus years ago. So it's been ongoing for a long time, although she has not had a new one in this series for a while. And it's just another good read if you enjoy Susan Elizabeth Phillips romances. They're more contemporary, modern romances, but she has a great writing style. They're just a lot of fun, a quick read, and I enjoyed this next installment in them. And I think she is writing another one as well in the series. So I always look forward to a Susan Elizabeth Phillips book. So this was one that I really enjoyed. And then the last one I wanted to mention that I really liked, and there is a second book that recently came out in the series. It's called An Ember in the Ashes. And this is one that quite a few people told me about, and it took another one that took me a while to get to. It is a bit longer. It's over 400 pages, but it's a fantasy. It's definitely not sci-fi. It's definitely set in a fantasy world, kind of inspired by ancient Rome, but it's a made-up world by the author Saba Tahir. And it's a brutal world, kind of like if you learn about ancient Rome, you know, it was pretty brutal with the gladiators and Julius Caesar and all of that going on. And it's in a world called the Empire. And there is a young young woman named Laia, and she is a slave. And the love interest name is Elias. They don't meet right away in the book, though. Laia is a slave in this world. Right now, in the beginning, she lives with her grandparents and her older brother. And they basically eke out an existence in this world from the impoverished streets. You know, they're doing whatever they can to survive. And nobody challenges the empire. It's the dictatorship, and they're all ruling. And then Elias is a soldier, and he is trained to be a soldier and trained to completely follow orders. But he doesn't want to be a soldier, and he doesn't want to move on to the next level that they have set for him in his, basically his path, in this world. And he wants to be free and not have to enforce these rules and laws and some of the horrific things they want him to do to the people. Well, when Laya's brother is arrested for treason, she has to make a decision. She goes to the rebels who she's heard about. Again, she's with her grandparents, but she kind of knows her parents were also rebels to the Empire and against the Empire. And she, you know, she's desperate to help her brother get out of what she knows will be his death. And she goes to them and they basically force her and they say, we'll help you, but you have to go spy on the Empire for us. And to do that, she has to become a slave within the military academy, because they want to know, the rebels want to know, you know, all the military secrets and what they'll next be doing and how best to take them down. Because essentially the way the Empire stays in power is by the military force. And so she goes into the military academy and as a slave, and she's treated like dirt, and she meets Elias, and their fate basically is intertwined through, like, basically maybe a third of the way into the book through the rest of the book. And the adventure and the action and all of that is where it really begins. And some of the choices they each have to make both together and individually. And it's really filled with some plot twists and people that you think might be enemies actually aren't, and vice versa. And there's that. And what I like that the author does is, while there are a lot of characters, she really, really focuses on key characters to moving the plot along. So you don't really get too confused about what's going on and how these people affect the story. I didn't find, even though there's a lot of characters, I didn't find myself getting too bogged down by trying to remember who was who. She uses people who are peripheral to the story, peripherally, and the people who are key to the plot and what's going on in that scene, in that action, she uses them very well. And so it moves the story along quickly. It's a cliffhanger at the end, and you definitely know there's another book coming. And the second book is called A Torch Against the Night. I have not read that one yet. It's on my list, and I definitely want to read it, because all the reviews that I've read so far and people who are very into this world that Saba Tahir, the author, has set up, have said A Torch Against the Night is even better than An Ember in the Ashes. Like, it's not always common that a sequel or, you know, the second book is always better, but many, many people are saying this one, it's even better. And she is going to be writing more in this world, in this story. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And I actually might listen to it on audio. As I was reading this book, I kept thinking, this one is one actually I probably should have listened to, because I tend to get really, if the narrator is good, that kind of helps. I really enjoy having the story read to me when it's a lot of action and adventure. That's just me. But anyway, so that's An Ember in the Ashes by Saba Tahir. So giving you a little bit of everything there. It's been a while and I have read quite a few books. I am on Goodreads if you want to follow me there, so you can see everything I've been reading. I have pretty much a mishmash of books and the types of things I read. But I am Tanisha on there. And on social media, Crafty Garden Mom on Instagram and Twitter. I do post fairly frequently. I think lately I haven't posted as much because I've been in between projects. So once I get started on some more projects, I will post a little bit more often. But anyway, so that's where you can find me. And I will post some show notes to this episode. I know I did not. I was very neglectful in the last episode. I'm sorry. But I will do a quick show note post for this episode and put that up so you can leave comments. And just if you want to stop by and say hi, it's been, you know, nice to hear you again. Anything you want to stop by and say is fine. I always enjoy reading your comments. You can also email me at TanishaQuilts@yahoo.com. I will admit, it does take me a little while to get back to people on Yahoo, simply because lately the spam has just been off the charts. I'm actually considering changing the email address for my podcast, and how to contact me, or for my podcast and my blog, simply because, you know, so many emails just get lost in all the spam I've been getting. It's crazy. I try and filter it, and it doesn't get better. So anyway, I'll let you know if I do that in future episodes. So everyone take care. Thanks again for listening, and I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.